Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Carrie Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
The world has changed. Are you still trying to reach people the same way? If you are, you're like most people. And unfortunately, you're going to be left behind. This is why at the Igniting Souls Conference 2022, we are taking an absolute deep dive and showing authors, entrepreneurs, and influencers how to leverage the new internet to grow their book, brand, and business. All the information is at ignitingsoulsconference.com. Get your ticket today because there are limited seats. Hope to see you there. Hey folks, welcome to Blockchain Life. It's Carrie back on the porch, and I have with me a very special guest, Drew. And Drew has an incredible company. We're going to learn about it today. And Drew, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Really good to be here, Carrie. I'm excited to chat.
Awesome. Hey, where are you out of, by the way?
So I am living at the moment in Portugal. I live in Lisbon, Portugal.
Yes.
Originally I'm from the East Coast. I'm from Rhode Island. Wow. But I've been out of the US for, I think, going 16 years now. Okay. I did 10 years Panama, and then we went from Panama, we moved here.
Let's jump right into that point, because I think that that says something. I've heard just by a little research that, I don't know, big stuff's happening in Portugal related to Web3 blockchain. Can you give us...
Oh, yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of that? Because I think that that's really interesting. I know in the US it's Miami and it's Wyoming and New York, but give us like, why is Portugal and what's happening?
So there's a lot to unpack there. So Portugal, you know, I think when I moved to Portugal, there was like talk around, you know, Lisbon and Porto being a hub for crypto. There wasn't a Web3 at that stage, right? Weren't labeling it as Web3. There was no discussion around Web3. Anyways, you know, and that primarily had to do with the fact that, you know, this is not financial advice. I am not an accountant. I don't play one on the internet. But basically, you have what's called the Golden Visa, and further to the Golden Visa, you have the non-habitual residency program. And so with a Golden Visa, you can, and there's various ways of going about it, but it's basically residency by investment. So you make an investment by buying real estate, and then you have the opportunity to get immediate permanent residency in Portugal. And after 5 years, apply for citizenship. And so you had a variety of things that triggered. But in summary, what I would say is that if you were to reflect on the last 5 years, I think Portugal managed to obtain the highest quality immigration on the planet. So whatever filter that they baked into this Golden Visa system, their immigration, I think, was of the highest quality, greatest filter on the planet over the course of the last 5 years. I think that the most interesting people, you know, of really productive, creative people, digital nomads, crypto people, you know, Web3 people, you know, digital asset people in general, a lot of creatives, the film industry, social media industry, tech in general. Once the work from home thing sort of took hold, you had like, I forget the numbers, but it's like over 1,000 people just from Twitter alone from the New York office. They moved to Portugal once they were allowed to work from anywhere. You know, second to that visa program that allowed all of this to happen, what made Portugal particularly attractive, because there are other Golden Visa programs in Europe, was that in the constitution and in the tax law of Portugal, there is no, you know, like many other places, cryptocurrency is not called out, obviously, because it wasn't conceived of at the time that most of these laws were written. But it's always subject to court interpretation and tax authority interpretation. And ultimately, what they concluded was that there was going to be, that it would be treated in regards to like a currency. Like if I have euros and I'm not a professional FX trader and I convert my euros into dollars or vice versa, there's no capital gains on that. And so that is not treated as income. It's not treated as a financial transaction. It's sort of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency was treated in the same way. And so that offered a lot of people who had been accumulating crypto over the years. So what we have is actually the first wave of people that came were really the real OGs, because these were people that had accumulated a lot of crypto. I mean, just literally on my street, I have one of the founders of Ethereum. Another guy up the street runs a multi-billion dollar crypto hedge fund. I mean, this is just on my little street. That attracted a lot of people that thought, okay, particularly non-Americans, because as an American, you're kind of just screwed either way, right? Living in Portugal doesn't offer you any advantage over living in Japan or anywhere else for that matter. You're going to pay taxes on your worldwide income. You have some roughly $120,000 in foreign earned income credit that you get right off the top, but everything else you're going to be taxed on in the same way as if you lived in the United States, just without a state tax, right?
But that 5 years is a secret.
5 years.
Meaning you said you come there with real estate with a golden visa, but then after 5 years.
5 years, you can apply for citizenship and actually get a Portuguese passport. Obviously, that process takes some time. It's not that 5 years, here you go, here's your passport. Yeah. But you can apply after 5 years and then obtain citizenship and actually become a Portuguese citizen. Now, the non-habitual residency program that allows for you to not pay taxes on all foreign earned income, again, doesn't really help Americans, but for non-Americans, it allows you to literally earn passive income anywhere else in the world. And for all intents and purposes, bring it to Portugal and pay zero taxes on it for 10 years. And so that's obviously very attractive, particularly for non-Americans. And it just, there was a flood of people, and then, COVID, and all the lockdowns and the various, policies from a state, various states, various countries, much of it overreaching. I would say, having been here throughout the whole experience, that Portugal had a very reasonable and I would say human response. And, with a few exceptions, there's a few moments of treachery, but for the most part, it was a very level-headed, very good response. So I think a lot of people that were in New York or in San Francisco and in other various places, and obviously worldwide, a lot of people from Hong Kong, a lot of people from Singapore, certainly a lot from France, a lot from England and Germany, all sort of took notice and said, well, we kind of want to live our lives and we can do that in Portugal. And Lisbon's got, a few things going for it that it's had for thousands of years, like sunshine, great wine, really humble, friendly people, great food, great seafood, great beaches, and just an overall great culture, right? And so it was like, it was like all of these things sort of just happened at the same time. Sounds Lisbon good. Was just at the bullseye, and it's a beautiful thing. There is a very strong Web3 culture here. There is basically a meetup or an event happening almost every single day. I've been here now over 4 years, and I'm almost like overwhelmed by it, and so I don't go to that many of them anymore. But sure. It is it's a very vibrant and robust Web3 community.
I love it. You can see my screen.
Yeah.
All right, man. Listen, let's get into this because I love what I see. I don't know what I see, but I love what I see. Can you tell
me? Let me tell you.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, so I've been in the domain name business for let's say about 25, 26 years. And well, it started out as a hobby. I've been, you know, really full time in the business for about 15 years. And we are now the largest domain name brokerage firm in the world. We are the guys that, you know, got sold prime.com to Amazon. We acquired x.com for Elon Musk. You know, we sold galaxy.com to Galaxy Digital, Mike Novogratz's company. We sold republic.com. We acquired it on behalf of Republic. We, you know, you name it. I mean, we're responsible for like 30 to 40% of all the largest domain sales that happen in the world.
By the way,
you can see down there. Yeah.
When we end this interview, can you carve out 5 to 10 minutes personally? Because I want to show you something. When we end. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Great.
Keep going, man. This is all fascinating. Right. I love this, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm nerding. Okay.
All right. So, you know, I started out with just collecting domain names, not with the intent of like reselling them. It wasn't that I was, you know,
I get you.
Squatter. You know, it was, I'm hyperactive. And every time I had an idea, you know, yeah. I was in college at the emergence of the consumer internet. I'm learning about these domain names, you know, that I'm learning about this internet thing. I can put up a website. Somebody in China can see it, you know, blowing my mind. And it's like, all right, well, every time I have an idea, I'm going to go get a domain for that. Now, obviously, like everybody else, I'm only going to execute on about 0.05% of those ideas. But, you know, as many people do, at that inception point of the idea, you get the domain name. And at that point, those domains were available. So I started acquiring domains. And then it was the early 2000s. You know, I made a good sale. That's a long story in and of itself. But that led me to, you know, really start thinking deeply about this and realizing that these domains had a tremendous amount of value, that there was an aftermarket, that there was an industry, that this was an emerging asset class that really nobody was aware of. And I would argue today that very few people are aware of it today. And I think that, you know, domain names are ultimately, so first off, they are really the first, you know, true digital asset. It was the only way to actually make a directional bet on the growth of the internet at that time, right? You could bet on, you know, some of the individual companies, but, you know, much like, you know, buying Bitcoin is making a directional bet on this incredible technology that has emerged. You can actually own a piece of the protocol, but, you know, you can't own a piece of TCP/IP. You can't own, you know, a piece of HTML. You can't own the protocol level. And so the next best thing was to own the domain names, which are the bedrock foundation on which the entire global digital economy is built.
It is the key to the open the house.
100%. I don't care. You know, people are so misunderstood on this subject. It's like, you know, Web3, it's the new internet, you know, or, you know, .com was, you know, the old web. And now we've got this new web. And, you know, you've got these a lot of misconceptions. What they don't get is that all of this is data packets. And all of those data packets get routed. I don't care where you are. I don't care what blockchain you're on. I don't care if you're on, you know, an ENS domain. I don't care if you're on a handshake. I don't care if you're on, you know, unstoppable domains. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're talking. Bitcoin, Ethereum, shitcoin, doesn't matter. Sorry, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
No, I gotcha.
But at the end of the day, every single one of the data packets from every transaction, from every transfer of information, those data packets are flowing through the same pipes that make up the global DNS system, which is governed by ICANN, and is ultimately what we say, you know, the legacy root zone. And that's not going to change anytime soon. There is absolutely unequivocally zero technology that I'm aware of on the horizon that is going to change that. Okay. So let's start there. So domain names are truly the bedrock of the entire global internet, the entire global economy, digital economy, which ultimately makes up, you know, it is the largest economy on the planet today. And from there, everything else is sort of, let's call it a second, third, fourth layer technology, right? And so, you know, domains were the first digital asset. Domains were ultimately the first NFT. You know,
by the way,
what is a domain
name?
It's
only
really
one
non
fungible like
token
you on the planet. I have no idea
how true that is.
but listen, I feel like you're a brother, man, because you have verbiage to say what I've been thinking for a long time, man. So I am nerding out right now on everything you're saying. This is
great. I love it. There's nothing more in the world that I love than nerding out on domain names and digital assets. And we'll get to Web3, we'll get to crypto, because that's all a big part of my story and, you know, and my company and just trying to get, I really want people to understand there's so much enthusiasm. Again, I've been in this game for a minute, you know, it's like,
I got a question though. Why
nobody cared until recently, right? That's and so this is exciting to me that people, what Web3 has done is actually push people a little bit further in understanding how the digital world works, right? And what digital assets are and why digital assets are not only the future, but also the past. Yes. And they're I would say some of the most important non-energy related assets on the planet. They're really the ultimate tool, the ultimate enabler of human innovation and freedom. And so self-sovereignty, data sovereignty, you know, you name it. So
like a portal to a new world, literally. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
how did you not get identified? Because I'm so with you, by the way.
Yeah.
How do you not get identified as the cyber squatter? Because I think that's so insulting. And I think it's usually said by people who don't get it.
100%.
But how did you overcome that stigma? Because
I'm a tough son of a bitch, man. I just don't care. You know, like, so I used to care. And, you know, we still get that to some extent, but people are learning, right? You know, people forget, right? Like the largest cyber squatters in the world, right? Wait, I'm going to come back to that term because I take issue with the term itself. And I just want people to understand what it means. But are the large corporations that all of you know and love, invest in, and have all their products and services in your home, right? You know, Amazon, Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, Microsoft, Google, these are the largest domain owners in the world. And it's not just the domain names that they're using. It's also these giant stables of super premium domain names that they have acquired either intentionally or through acquisitions or through mergers. And they just hold on to them. And sometimes they sell them for a lot of money, or sometimes they, you know, will launch a new product or a service on them, right? Microsoft just acquired flip.com for millions of dollars, right?
Amazon. So, that was the big story recently. $1 million. Amazon.eth.
Yeah. So that's a complete BS story. Okay. So, in my opinion, right. Like, you know, I'll preface it with that, but I'm quite certain. You know, we have in financial markets, you have the term painting the tape, right? And that's ultimately what was happening. It's somebody that owns Amazon.eth. Ultimately that domain name is a liability, right? And so, you know, people think this is a really important point that people should understand in these blockchain domain names. Okay. And I'm extraordinarily well-versed in blockchain domain. People like to say, you know, get out of here, grandpa. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, you're a Web 2 guy. It's like, okay. So, first off, I was probably one of the first people to ever own a .eth domain name. Right. So when the ENS system launched, whatever it was, 5-6 years ago, like I registered probably a couple thousand, you know, .eth domain names. Ultimately, I lost that wallet, unfortunately. And all those domain names, you can go check it. Actually, the guy that got AndrewRosner.eth just returned it to me like a couple days ago after we recorded a podcast and I talked about it. He saw that. So thank you. Shout out. But I had, you know, thousands of others. I lost out on so much of this, you know, the ENS token that got dropped, and then the value of the domain names, and then the ETH that I had locked up in those domains, because the way that that system worked originally is very different than it works today. It was sort of this bonding system. You know, I want, you know, let's say, greenhouse.eth, you know, you bid for it. It was an auction, and then you, whatever your winning bid was, that wasn't expensed. It wasn't gone. It was just locked in a bond behind the domain. And when you no longer wanted to use the domain, you could release the domain back into the market and release your ETH to your wallet. Okay. So anyways, I lost all of it. But the point is only that I was very early in one of the earliest in .eth domains. I'm on I'm a seed round investor into Unstoppable Domain Names. You know, on their advisory board, and I'm a super early and very large investor into Handshake domain names. And so those are really the top three in the blockchain domain space. And so I'm quite well versed. And so I would encourage people to you know, listen and not just you know, make these irrational decisions and beliefs. So the point is that with Amazon.eth, right, you have it is a clear trademark of Amazon, and the intention and the rhetoric being the narrative going around on social media is about, you know, that it's Amazon going to buy it. And they're ultimately infringing on Amazon's mark. And even though .eth is a, you know, Web3 or blockchain domain name, and therefore it is not susceptible to direct seizure by Amazon or by a court without the cooperation or physical seizure from the current owner, that doesn't change the cyber squatting laws. And so Amazon can very easily file a cyber squatting lawsuit against that owner, assuming they can identify who the owner is, which is you know, not super easy, but also not that hard, as we've seen, right? The IRS, everybody was like, oh, you know, people are using, you know, crypto for evading taxes. And it's like, the IRS is like, you know, we kind of like this crypto thing. We can track these people pretty easily. We, you know, we kind of like this blockchain thing. This is great. Not only is it increasing tax, you know, tax revenues, but we're, you know, this is making it actually a lot easier to find out who's making money and find them and identify them, et cetera. So I think that's a myth. But just because something is on a blockchain does not make it not susceptible to existing law, right? There is a book of law in worldwide on trademarks and copyright. And if you infringe upon that, just because your domain cannot be seized, don't forget that there is a mandatory minimum $100,000 penalty per domain name enforceable by the court upon you just for owning that domain name. So I think that's a really important thing for people to keep in mind and remember. But I think that that is, or I'm quite sure that that $1 million offer on that Amazon.eth domain was from the owner or from a friend of the owner. You know, you notice there was no action against it. I mean, it's just, it's silly. It's not real.
Interesting.
There's no incentive for Amazon to pay $1 million to get that domain name. They have other means. So ultimately, you know, where I wanted to go with that timeline was like, you know, domains being the first digital asset, the first NFT, first non-fungible tokens. And then, you know, Bitcoin came along and, you know, domains, you know, we say all roads lead to domain name because it doesn't matter who you are, what you do, your business, your service, your product, your identity starts with a domain name online. So, you know, domains are a very early indicator of everything. I think they are one of the leading indicators. We see, you know, slowdowns in the economy, pickups in the economy, new trends, basically before anybody else. I've yet to see you know, people say, oh, Google search data, but actually that's backward looking. Domain registrations are real time and forward looking. So anyways, I had one of the early Bitcoin core developers in 2011 introduce me to Bitcoin. And so I was, you know, really early into Bitcoin. And and then that led me into investing into lots of, you know, ICOs and, let's say lesser alternative coins. And then, including Ethereum and, you know, and then I was a very early adopter. I started investing into, NFT companies in 2017 and 18 already, before anybody knew what NFT was. I actually owned NFT.com. NFT.com was my domain name. And then I sold that for $2 million, $2.1 million. But, you know, just talk about a horrible story. It was, I mean, you know, everything has to be looked at, you know, relative, right? So, but You know, obviously that was a phenomenal return. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, gloat, but I sold that in January of 2020. Yeah. Just before NFTs really took off. And, you know, the thing is I was early in NFTs. And so I was a little bit jaded because, you know, it was like, basically I saw 2 years of nothing, right? One of my portfolio companies, Cryptograph, now it's my NFT, these guys, they launched the first celebrity NFTs ever. We did Paris Hilton's first NFT, Ashton Kutcher's first NFT. We literally are the ones that like showed these guys what an NFT was. When we approached Paris Hilton, she didn't know what an NFT was. Wow. Ashton Kutcher didn't know what an NFT was. Now he is one of the largest investors in the space. His partner, Guy Osiri, is now running the Bored Ape Yacht Club and Yuga Labs. You know, it's been a very interesting journey for digital assets.
So let's folks, and by the way, if you're listening on audio, I really encourage you to watch the video as well on YouTube and Facebook, but we're at mediaoptions.com. So can you walk us through, Drew, just like, what am I looking at? You know, I see this whole thing about like length and age, you know, I'm very curious. Give us a breakdown of what I'm looking at.
So, you know, again, we are the world's number one domain name brokerage firm. We've sold more domain names than anybody else, you know, in the secondary market, high-end domain names. I think we have in excess of $600 million in career sales now. You know, basically there are three aspects to the business, you know, to simplify it. We represent, you know, the core business is we represent, you know, the world's top startups, the top companies in the world, and investors, and we help them to acquire the domain names they want or the domain names that they need. In most cases, it's, you know, an upgrade for a company's brand from, you know, a lesser domain name, whether that's a .io or a .co or a .xyz. And then the company reaches some degree of success where they realize it's now time to upgrade to the exact, what we call the exact brand match.com. So if your company is called, you know, just using that greenhouse example, if your company was, you know, called Greenhouse, but your company was trygreenhouse.com or it was greenhouse.io or greenhouse.xyz, well, there will come a point, you know, believe me or not, at your peril, but there will come a point where somebody interested in your company, meaning one of your VCs or an investment bank or an acquiring party or the investment bank that's going to take you public, there's going to come at a point where they're going to say to you, you've literally hit the end of the line if you cannot upgrade your domain name now. You will bump your head up on the ceiling. And so, you know, ultimately, we help those companies to then go out and acquire their best version.com domain name. In most cases, now we're pretty agnostic. It's just that, you know, the law of the land is quite simply that .com is king. That's not going to change. And so, you know, ultimately, there is a point in the life cycle of every company where they basically say, all right, some companies are unfortunate and that .com is gone. It's being used by somebody else, it's, you know, as we say, off the market forever. And then you have a difficult decision to make. Either you've got enough brand loyalty and penetration that it's okay. You can operate on a lesser domain name, a subpar domain name. But in most cases, it ultimately leads to a required, you know, complete rebrand, which is very dangerous and very costly. So, and it can, you know, ultimately cost your momentum. So,
like autographs.io, crypto, like there's a lot of people that are just coming out of the gate with .ios. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And I used to, you know, be like, guys, you're making a mistake. And I don't think that way anymore. I think that that's great. I think it's great that, you know, people need to iterate. They need to come out of the gate. They need to launch a business. It doesn't necessarily make sense for everybody to come out and say, oh, let me go buy this domain for $200,000, $500,000, $1 million, $5 million, right? That's not obtainable and it doesn't make sense. And particularly from a cash flow standpoint, you know, there are a lot of, particularly today, reasons to conserve your cash flow and figure out if you've got a winning business. And so I think it's great to launch on a .xyz or a .io or a .co or, you know, put in a prefix or a suffix, whatever. And then, you know, as I said, there will come a point in your life cycle, if you are a successful business, that's usually 3 to 5 years out. And, you know, it's at your B, you know, usually around your B round, could be your A round if you, you know, today your A is your new B, right? So, you know, yeah. And then it makes sense. You know, you've raised a sufficient capital. You take 1-2% of that total capital raise and, you know, you invest it into your brand. I think it was Bill Gates that said the absolute best investment that you are going to make as the founder or CEO of a company is into your brand. Wow. Hands down. There's nothing else, right? There's no single investment you're going to make, not buying another company, not share buybacks, not any, invest into your brand. Because ultimately that intangible asset is the most valuable thing your company has in most cases. You know, most companies are pretty asset-like these days, right? And so in those types of companies, there's no question your domain name is going to be, you know, one of the best investments you can make. And you know, you can go back through all the case studies and just look. It's like, you know, we have our own podcast called Domain Sherpa, domainsherpa.com. And you can go, we've interviewed, you know, hundreds of founders that have upgraded their domain. And then they tell their story subsequently about why did they do it? What are they seeing as an effect? You know, we interviewed Jamie Siminoff from ring.com. You know, he says, look, I can tell you with 100% certainty, if we hadn't acquired ring.com, we would not have been acquired by Amazon. If I hadn't acquired ring.com, we wouldn't have been a $1 billion company.
Like, that is huge.
These things make all the difference. You know, the same for the founder of Carrot, carrot.com, that upgrade changed their business. It's just over and over and over again.
Drew, I love this. And I want to end soon because I want to 5 to 10 minutes with you because I
won't.
But folks, Drew is so on. I just found this graphic yesterday. 1975, the S&P 500, 17% of the S&P 500 were intangible assets.
Yeah.
Today, 2020, or even 2022.
Today, it's higher than that. So today, in a post-COVID world, I bet you that it's 94, 95, 96%.
So crazy. It's so crazy. So folks, he is absolutely on. This is why I'm nerding out, because I don't think a lot of people get this. And I've never met someone, Drew, I'm not blowing smoke away. I've never met someone who's more passionate and knowledgeable about domain names. And that's why when your podcast request came in, I'm like, we need this guy. We need him quick. Get him on. So I am thrilled that you're here, man. And look, last thing you want to
say. It's a really, really simple analogy, actually. That's an amazing chart. I'd love you to send me that link.
If you
take that chart and you just, you know, first off, let's define what is that chart, right? That chart is total CapEx of the S&P 500, right? The entire box is CapEx, right? And so over time, you can see CapEx into real tangible assets is dropping like a rock.
Wow.
And if you flip it upside down, CapEx in intangible assets is going like this, right? And then I bet you, if you were to take my domain name portfolio since, you know, the mid to late 90s, and you were to map it onto that, the trajectory of the valuations would do the exact same thing, right? It's kind of like the analogy in finance. It's like, you know, I don't know if you've heard the expression, it's all one trade, right? And it's basically like, meaning that it didn't matter if you bought, you know, crypto, oil, you know, real estate, you know, everybody felt like a genius because it all went up, right? And so, ultimately what it was take that market cap and then divide it by, you know, make the Federal Reserve's balance sheet expansion the denominator of that. And you're going to find out that it's all the same, right?
Wow.
You know, how much did it go up? Divided by the Federal Reserve, you know, balance sheet. And it's like, oh, there we go. That's the growth. That's the appreciation, right? And it goes across every asset class, right? So it's like the same thing. As the money stopped going into tangible assets and it started going into intangible assets, the value of intangible assets skyrocketed.
I love it. I love it. Folks, mediaoptions.com. You can look at buying, selling, hiring Drew. Drew, you blew my mind today. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Blockchain Life. We hope today's conversation ignited your soul and inspired your mind. Post your comments in a podcast review on iTunes or your platform of choice. We read every single review because your thoughts matter to us. Please share this episode with a friend. We look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.